And let's say you have a 1% yield, which is normal, I guess, for something like that. How much would you expect to pay for that bond if you were going to get 1% yield?
Oh, I don't need a calculator. You know, I don't know.
Well, on a 30,000 bond, maturity bond, the sales price is 26,000 for just a little over a year. That's not anywhere near 1%.
I have no idea what you're looking at, Mike. I'm at a disadvantage there. But what I do know is that this is the typical structure for a public finance bond.
I understand that, but there's a difference between the maturity value, what the taxpayer is paying, and the yield to the buyer of the bond. And our group is to look at it from the taxpayer standpoint, not the bondholder.
That's true. Right.
So if we've got 12% bonds, and the figures show 12% depreciation rate, to the taxpayer, isn't that at least 12%?
But that would be a long-term bond.
No, that's a short-term bond.
It can't be a short-term bond for that 12%. It's impossible.
Well, if I may, you know, I brought up this discussion while you're looking at that. Maybe I could opine. I think, you know, really what I was trying to point out here is regardless of the additional percentage, whenever you do a bond offering, you're going to have additional costs. And you're going to have interest rates, certainly, but on top of your interest rate, you're going to have issuance costs. You're going to have bond counsel, financial advisors, and lots of lawyers. Exactly right. So all of that tacked on to the cost of the actual money you get is the cost of your issuance.
The true interest cost.
The true interest cost, exactly right. So that is always going to be greater than going down to the store and buying a tablet. So, you know, it's not a problem that I think this group can solve. In fact, much of this has already been predetermined, but just something I bring up so that we're aware of it. So if the discussion does come up, how are we funding technology? Something comes from bond proceeds. You know, what that additional cost is, I don't know. It might vary from year to year, but it's not the cost of the technology itself. So that's what I wanted to point out.
But I think that's an important distinction, is the technology infrastructure
might as well just open
versus
the
tablets.
Yeah, see, now that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. If this is us putting in, the problem with in my mind with technology is they were changing basic technology. You know, 5-10 years ago, people were running cab wires everywhere. Mm-hmm. I bet you these buildings are full of blue wires.
Mm-hmm.
5 years from now.
Yeah, who's to say
right.
What will be? You're
right.
Taking your best shot at.
Right. You know. So, yeah, but if, you know, if we're talking about closets full of conduits, that makes sense with bond money, but tablets and phones, you know, typically, at least in the private sector, you get that money out of your operating funds. You know, to
well, we're not looking at tablets, and you know, we're just looking at stuff like this up here. We think that might last 10 years for that kind of setup. But who's to say? You know,
who's to say
what's coming?
But that's why I thought it would be helpful to go over the definition of infrastructure that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think that is very, very intuitive.
And I'll just make one other statement, a clarifying statement, Tom. When we buy, whether it's CABs or SIBs, current interest rate, we don't start paying down the premium. It's a balloon payment on all of them. You pay interest on the SIBs as you go along. But if it's a 5-year bond, you pay the premium on the 5-year bond on the 5th year. If it's a 10-year bond, you pay that in 10 years. Unlike our homes, where you're chipping away at, you don't do that with any of the bonds.
Oh, no principal payment is all.
No,
just
no,
oh, okay,
and that's the way
you.
They're all
off.
And so, but the cash, you're not paying any interest, so then it's compounding.
Yes.
Yeah, and I understand that.
Interest is paid for that 5 years. You get interest. But then the principal would be due in the 5th year. From
the 5th year, one big balloon payment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have a 1-year premium, a 1-year maturity, a 2-year maturity, 3-year. Generally out to around 15, 20 years. Then you have term bonds, you know, at the long end.
Okay. So.
And you apologize for not letting me finish. I think this is a great conversation. This is why we're having these discussions, why we have these meetings. So make sure you all, as the overseers, are understanding what we're doing with the dollars. So please don't apologize. We need to ask questions. We need to ask them as they come up. Definition of an infrastructure. General definition is what you don't see. The stuff in the walls, the stuff in the ground, the conduit. The general definition for infrastructure is the stuff you don't see. So that's just kind of how you can start to play it. When you're dealing with state funds, for instance, there's a 10-year rule. If the system, the device, or the equipment doesn't last longer than 10 years or isn't projected to, you're not supposed to use those dollars on that equipment. So that's the mentality we use towards your question. What are we using Prop K dollars for? That same mentality. If we don't think it's going to last long, yeah, it's not appropriate to use it for that system. So that's the general idea that we're using for the Prop K dollars. So does that help with the definition? It's basically stuff you don't see is the infrastructure. Okay? So anyway, this whole sheet is correct. I apologize for the mistake previously. What I'm referring to is in two slides from now when we get to the actual, the bigger infrastructure projects. And now we're not working. There we go. Woodland Park Middle School. So this is, I'm assuming, a new project for Prop K. Is that, Tom, do you recall? Something you have not heard about yet?
I have not heard.
Okay, so this is one we started since the last time we met. We've added this project as one of the current status as it's in DSA review. So all we've done so far with this project is design it and put it into DSA so that they can review it. We haven't started construction on these dollars, so we're just playing with the soft cost portions. We haven't hit the hard cost portion. So the scope of work is to modernize the two classrooms, remodel the administration building, a constructive staff restroom, front entry beautification. What's happening there is water intrusion problems, and so we're addressing those issues at the same time we're doing that. We're trying to prevent its rain that's coming into the building, so that's why we're doing beautification. We're adding a canopy to prevent the water intrusion. So we're calling it beautification because it is helping upgrade, but it's really for a practical purpose. It's not just for beautification. Floor moisture mitigation. This is a site that has a lot of water underground, and it's coming through through the ground, through the floor. So we're having to do a lot of water mitigation in that campus as far as once you tear up the old floor, you have to put a special layer down to make sure that moisture doesn't come through as well before you put your glue, before you put your carpet, or before you put whatever flooring you have there. So that's what the floor moisture mitigation
this is about. Not an unusual problem in San Marcos. We have very high water table in much of the valleys.
The school is on
and why did this get by?
I don't know that history. I know that this has been a problem for years, like you said. Sometimes we always have to do ground tests. That's mandate from the state for any project that we do. We have to go on the ground and see what's happening. I'm sure there's reports or something that can show those geotechnical reports to say what the architect or designer engineer looked at before he decided to design it the way he did. But things change. You know, water tables sometimes do actually fluctuate and go up and down over time. So as far as what did they do previously, I'm sure they followed whatever report they had at the time. We have the problem today, and we're just trying to address it so it doesn't grow any worse.
There's a lot of change orders on this project that delayed it because they kept running into water problems at that site. So
we don't have complete water hydrology reports on the site?
I think they do the best they can, but still, when you're building, you run into issues. Now, this particular thing, we know we've had problems with. Floor. So I remember the science, they had a rubber floor and 2 foot tiles that popped. So we took it off, put a better sealer on. The gym, we had a sealer on. We've replaced the floor. It was moisture in it. We had a sealer.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's a really wet area. That pond out front, I think, is a natural spring out there.
This is a common problem throughout the whole city.
Yeah.
We have a high water table.
Very much
that's
so.
One of the biggest expenses on our road construction and maintenance is because the water keeps cracking and breaking up.
Yeah. So when we do deal with a floor, we do try to go in there and put a nice, whatever the current sealant is that we can get.
But we are going for the review before we go out for bid, correct?
That's correct.
Is this going to be a competitive bid, or is it going to be lease back?
This is a lease back with Edge Construction.
Edge Construction.
Correct. So you actually segued into phase one and phase two. So phase one, we've actually have started some of the floor repairs because that's not something that DSA has purview on. The state architect DSA looks at structural changes, fire and life safety changes, and accessibility changes. That's their purview. So if you change your carpet, they don't really look at that. So in order to get most of the building done in time for school to start up again, we have started on the non-DSA items. Once we get our review back, because we don't want to start before DSA approval, once we get the DSA approval, then we start the actual construction. So that's why we have a phase one and a phase two on this project.
Who's in charge of the stormwater grain issues, is that another agency altogether as well?
That is another agency, but we don't have that issue here because our, except for the front entry repair, everything's indoors, so we don't have the stormwater issue here.
Just
but that's typically a separate, we usually have a consultant that helps out with that through the architect who's ever doing the design typically.
Okay.
So schedule, again, August 1st, we're having some delays through DSA, that's not uncommon, but we just have to, we have to play by their rules, and then you have the budget there for the total lease-leaseback. So any questions on this project?
Gary, was this program explicit, or was this school site explicitly identified in the Prop K language?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Almost all of them were, except for some of the newer ones. And even some of the newer ones like San Alejo, mm-hmm. we had some minor things that we were going to add there, and that was a part of the project. Yeah.
Well, I haven't memorized Prop K yet, but there's a citation in there for Woodland Park someplace. I could find it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do want to reemphasize the new K-8 is not a Prop K school. It never was a part of the Prop K language, so that's a different funding mechanism. But just about every school was mentioned in Prop K.
The lease back arrangement, what are we leasing or back from the builder?
There's three contracts dealing with a lease back scenario. It's the site lease, there's also a lease back contract, and then there's a construction contract. So essentially we're leasing the portion of the site that they're touching and the buildings that they're touching on that site. We're leasing, that's the lease back concept with the lease back for a modernization type of a project.
So
they get it,
it's
they
not
get it for a buck,
uh-huh.
they build it, they give it back to us, and we pay for the total cost.
Right. In this case, where they're not doing the entire campus, it's the portions that they're touching, and it's specific.
I'm not sure why they created that.
I can
title.
Tell you why originally, because we had that in a couple of reports and workshops in the Taxpayers Association. Originally, some schools couldn't raise bonds, they couldn't come up with any way of financing things.
Right.
So they would lease.
Up front.
So they would lease the site. Then someone else would come in with their money, build it up, then you would lease it back, and eventually that transformed with time into a buyback. And one of the major attractions that makes this particularly controversial is that through a creative way of interpreting the rules, many districts have said, well, we do not have to go out and get competitive bids for things. We can just pretty much pick and choose whoever we want. And this has brought up a great deal of controversy about insiders, non-competitive bids. And within the Taxpayers Association, there is an active controversy as to whether or not this is the appropriate way to do buildings. And one of the questions is the differential costs mm-hmm. in some districts. Now, I work with the HESA mm-hmm. Oversight Committee, mm-hmm. and they're talking about the cost to them is $300 a square foot. Ours is about $450 a square foot. This is just across the county. So this is where the issues and the controversies are beginning to come about.
I just think, you know, just a word of caution on making that kind of comparison is, I don't know what kind of school that is.
No, I'm just
ours.
Saying that's...
But this whole issue of competitive bidding, I think absolutely there needs to be a competitive process. There needs to be an open, competitive, fair review process that is vetted and transparent. A pure competitive low bid process, I don't think you necessarily get the best result.
Right.
So, you know, I just want to be careful about the use of competitive bidding because, you know, sometimes you get what you pay for and that's not what you want. But I absolutely think it needs to be an open, transparent, competitive mm-hmm. process to choose whoever is doing work for our district.
So to segue onto that, what we've done to try to help with exactly what the both of you are saying, for instance, we have a list of general contractors that are approved by the board as lease-leaseback contractors for Prop K. What we've done is we took those four competitors and said, give us a competitive bid on your general conditions. Because the drawings aren't typically done when you hire a lease-leaseback contract. One of the advantages of LLB is to have them come on board early so they can be a part of the design process and start to tell architect and owner that you might save some dollars if you tweak it this way. You might save some dollars if you do it this way. That's not quite buildable that way. So one of the advantages of LLB, you can hire them a little bit earlier and have them be a part of the design process and, again, get better value when you're all said and done. So the point is you won't have your drawings done that early. So what we do is say, what are your general conditions, your overhead and profit, and have a competitive bid for that portion of their work. We hire whoever we think brings the best value through that process, that competitive bid. Then we proceed with that company. Now, when the drawings are done, we say, you company, show us your bids per trade. So show us you've gone to three subcontractors for your electrical, three subcontractors at least for your mechanical. So then we do another competitive process to make sure, and they have to show us they've done the competitive process to try to, again, get the lowest dollars even through the LLB process. The advantage is we don't have to take the lowest bidder because we may know Sparky Electric is very sparky and not very good, but he had the lowest dollar, so we'll take the next one on the list knowing that he's going to be a problem because we want to get best value out of the process. So we are doing a competitive process within the LLB system.
There's also a matter of qualifications. You know, you can put a bid in for a project but not be capable of doing it, and then right. You find out later that you can't complete the project. We have to stop it and go out to bid again to complete the project.
Right. Deal with their bonding entity and things like that. That all delays projects. So we're trying to, you know, see the whole puzzle in a competitive process and utilize this not just to take advantage. Like you said, there are a lot of people that are taking advantage of LLB. We're trying to still make it a competitive process even within that delivery method. And Kathy's done a great job setting that up. So.
And another complicating issue is the major contributors to these bond funds ending up getting contracts. And I guess Sweetwater was 100%, and they have real problems. From what I understand, we're at 70% of the major contributors getting work. And I think that isn't necessarily low because some of the people who were didn't receive contracts at the beginning may have later on, but even 70%, that gives real cause for concern in some quarters.
And there's another layer even before all that is the RFP and RFQ process, the request for qualifications and request for proposals. So the request for qualifications is what I mentioned that the board has done. We've done a request for qualifications of all, you know, a bunch of contractors, and we pull that pool down through this process to the four that we selected. So again, to try to avoid, you know, going to the person who pays the most money, essentially, we're going to who's qualified and doing, again, a competitive process to make sure we're getting the best value with the taxpayers' dollars.
This would be a sealed bid. We're doing the different bid process.
Pardon?
This would be a sealed bid process?
The RFQ process is not, but in that RFQ process, it's very clear what the qualifications will be selected on.
And we have on our panel people from outside this district.
Yes.
On our panel. I hope you don't include us in the same category as Sweetwater.
Thank you. I'm trying to avoid that.
Well, let me finish. They did some interesting. They had not only donation of campaign, they did board campaigns. And down there, their boards were heavily involved in selecting contractors. Our boards do not select contractors. They approve contractors. I and my staff pick the contractors through this process. With regards to that campaign thing, that all that money went through a private nonprofit organization, not through my office. I was not involved in it, and they didn't want to be involved in it. I never asked anyone to donate. But just about anyone who's in the business gets hit up for those donations. So, you know, that's kind of like they're damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's an unfortunate thing. Once our board says, okay, we're going to, practically any government aid, we're going to go out for a bond. They cannot spend any money to promote it. I can't even use my phone to talk about it unless somebody asks their question, but I cannot go give a speech during work hours. I have to do everything outside of work hours to promote it. Can't use my office computer. So that's why they have that, okay, we got to raise money to do the campaign. And unfortunately, I hate it. And I've told some architects that they go, well, do I have to? I go, no, you don't have to make a thing. You don't have to make any donation. You put your name in the hat, and we will interview you just like anyone else.
Well, I'm just explaining sources of controversy.
Yeah, it is.
Sweetwater was a bad case, and
yeah, I think that was an extreme case.
We had a large number of donors in the business who got contracts, and that's always going to draw fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to say, though, that the process for selecting the contractor and the process for selecting the architect was done well before we started our process for the campaign and for Prop K.
Right.
And the reason for that was so that I was assuming at the time we're going to pass that proposition, but we want to be ready. We're going to go out and we're going to tell the community this is what we want to do. And this is what we feel is best for our kids and our community, and you want to be ready to go. You don't want to say, oh, gee, I'm still working on it. We would just be starting the construction of San Marcos High School now if we had done that.
Right. Now, the pre-bond issue work that was done, was that recouped by the district, or was that taken out of the general fund?
What?
There was this pre-bond design work.
Yeah, so that was the district paid for that.
The district paid for it, out of the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Construction dollars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, the campaign part, you know, we had advisors, how do you do a campaign, we did phone surveys. That was all out of the general operating budget. And so any design of the school came out of Prop K, like architect fees. Going way back, no. When we did the whole district plan, no, that was not Prop K. We had to come up with that ourselves.
Did I miss anything?
I don't know.
Still in the transition. I just want to come back to Kathy. Everything that I said is accurate on the history.
Yeah.
And Kathy didn't even know who donated what when she was selecting whomever. She was not involved in any of that bond campaigning stuff. So we wanted to keep it as clean as possible.
The architect and contractor selection was in 2009 board meeting, so that just gives you a hint of, you know, things happened well before, so we can avoid exactly what you're talking about.
But they all get strong-armed.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm just surprised that some of the other underwriters and other financial advisors didn't get hit up and contribute as well.
Yeah, I think they were all hit up. They can say no.
It was a difficult time at that point. We're still, you know, in the recession, and there are a lot of challenges. There are a lot of schools not being built. So people weren't contributing to different bond campaigns, even though they may have been asked.
I'm just trying to indicate why there's controversy.
Right. Any other questions about the part? Technology infrastructure upgrades. So this is the one I was confusing previously. I apologize. So this is, as you see at the bottom, $20 million estimate for this. This is really our push to get ready for Common Core, as well as upgrade our facilities for technology as needed. So this is the big push here. This is starting to look at all the projects that did not get E-rate grants, or not applicable for them. So we're trying to take care of all schools throughout the district. The first phase, we're looking at La Costa Meadows, Paloma, Mission Hills, and the district office as well. So the good news, part of the reason why you see some of the newer buildings, this building and Mission Hills on there, there are a lot less to do. We can do them fairly quickly and get them done and show paying dollars out quickly. Because to be honest with you, construction dollars are starting to climb up. So we're trying to get projects done a little bit quicker than in the past. So these are quick buildings to do because there's not as much to do. So that's why you see two of the older campuses and two of the newer campuses on this list. We're trying to knock some out that way.
And we're test driving this.
We're test driving.
We went out for a bid quickly. Did not turn out well. We think some of it's because of such a last-minute thing, and most of the people were so occupied they didn't want to bid on it. I think out of four, only one bid or something
right.
like that,
right.
And it was higher than our estimates. So we said this to sit back and take our time, but you're looking for those windows when the kids aren't in class to do this kind of stuff, it makes it real difficult. Do we do it on weekends at night? Drives the cost up. But that's the nature of the beast. And we estimated $20 million. We originally estimated several years ago was going to be more like $9 million. But, you know, this, if it starts getting too high, then we'll start going back and tweaking things out.
So for clarification, the $20 million is for all of the rest of the campuses, and just for these four. So this is just phase one of the $20 million budget. Scope of work is upgrading technology infrastructure, the stuff that you don't see. Prepare for the Common Core technology requirements. Modernizing inside the classroom. So for instance, in this room, we would put in, at very least, the conduit for that projector, but not necessarily install the projector right now. We may have to find other funds to actually install that projector, but we're ready for it when we get those extra funds. And then provide minimal security cameras. So around the perimeter of those campuses, a lot of times we don't have enough security cameras. They pay off indefinitely for us if we can see who, how, and what happened. It's also just a deterrent. If somebody sees a camera, a lot of times they stop whatever they're going to do. So we're starting to install minimal cameras to try to help us with those sorts of issues. The schedule, again, is from now until summer of 2014 in preparation for Common Core. We want a whole year to practice with this technology and this testing system before we actually have to utilize it. We don't want to get there and find out we have problems and we did it wrong. So we're trying to give ourselves a year to practice before we have to do the Common Core standards testing. Yes.
Now, the soft costs. What about the software? Because I used to run a IT department. And the software is typically much more than the hardware. Now, how are we funding the software? Is that coming from the federal government, or are we developing this along the way?
It's generally out of our operating budget. Most of this is just hardware stuff. And wires, switches, all the goodies.
This is software these days. And obviously that's not. This is hardware.
Right.
You know, getting this in so we can push the button and change from this device to that device is the majority of the software these days. So it helps with what you're talking about in conjunction with GRE6.
So that gives you a visual of what router type technology.
Correct.
The switches, the wires, the spaghetti stuff goes everywhere. But if we have certain softwares that we run, it's usually out of our operating budget. And a lot of times it's an annual cost or a lease. Lease a license fee that we just build into our operating budget.
Okay. Tom? There's 15 schools that didn't qualify for the grant, and so that's going to be covered by this $20 million budget plus the district headquarters. San Marcos High is part of that 15, but it's already upgraded, so yeah. it wouldn't. So
correct.
So probably about 15 facilities for the $20 million.
Well, we've already done San Marcos Elementary.
Oh, okay.
We've already done, I mean, to the most parts, it's a done deal. School is 210. The high school, San Marcos High School, we're going to do Joliane's fairly new. Mm-hmm. All the classrooms have those type of little setups. The new building we just built has it at C's, but we'll be doing some things at C's. It all depends on how old, and the older ones get more than the newer ones.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then again, with the leased facilities, which I think are included in those numbers, obviously we're not going to go and do a full board infrastructure project on somebody else's property. So for leased properties where we have, for instance, the ATP and thing, that's going to be a lot less, if any.
It's a building we rent for our adult special ed kids.
Oh, right.
In fact, we're buying a building down the street. We're going to move in there in about 3 years.
Corey, just to comment something you mentioned earlier, and it goes to the budget item. Mm-hmm. I was recently at a meeting with the president of the Building Industry Association in San Diego, and he said, Gene, the market has really turned. He said, you know, it used to be that you could hire a contractor and subcontractors just a drop of a dime. He said it's really turned around. Contractors are having a really hard time finding qualified subcontractors now that aren't already tied up. Now, what does that mean? It means costs are going up. Mm-hmm. So that's something I think as you rightly mentioned, it's something to think about. Get as much done as you can.
And this is not a Prop K project, but for the new K-8 school, the proposed new K-8 school, We're using in our estimates a 5.14, I think, percent cost escalation. Whereas on the last project, we used 2%. So we are trying to factor that in, because by the time we hit midpoint of that project is where we hit our escalation point. We are realizing